This is Turning the Corner, Life in Austin's Dove Springs. I'm Matt Largy. Ron Potts used to be a cop, and he worked a lot in Southeast Austin. He even lived here for a while.
I was thinking this was good as a starting point because my house, the 5104 Turnstone, built that in 1980. And then this was built like in 83.
We're at a hotel near the corner of Ben White and I-35.
This is Omni Hotel. It was built as a Wyndham. It's on the outer perimeter of what they call the Dove Springs area.
Ron used to run security at the hotel when he was off duty.
So you see this door here? And when this was built, this was the number one like your rock and roll bar in Austin. It was the first bar to have lasers. It was packed 7 days a week.
It was a different time for the hotel and for Dove Springs.
So back when they built this hotel, they obviously built it thinking that this was sort of an up-and-coming area.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Trammell Crowe, he built this whole development, the South Park Business Park, and it was going to be the kickoff of this whole area. I mean, most of these homes back then were relatively new, but this whole area was starting to be a big thing.
Dove Springs was on its way up, but then something else happened.
As it got into the late 80s, you started seeing the Crips. The Crips and Bloods were all over Austin. Back then, they gave it a nickname of Drug Springs. And that was the nickname, and that's what killed this whole area. It was all Crip territory. We had the Donahue Crips, which is a street down here on Donahue, and the Palo Blanco Crips, which is a street out here, and it was their territory. You had shootings out here. It was just bad. So this whole area just went downhill, and that's why we kept cops. This was built as a Wyndham. It was the only Wyndham back then that had police officers in the whole corporation working security because it was such a bad area.
And for years, that's the way it was in Dove Springs. It got a reputation as a dangerous place. People who could afford to, they moved away. And the neighborhood sank into a cycle of crime and poverty. There has been progress along the way. In the 90s, people in Dove Springs got together to push for a new community center and a new library. Things were happening, but it didn't last.
When I've seen over the last several years, I see it going up and down. It's like a roller coaster because programs come out, but a lot of them fade off because it's just the leadership's got to stay active.
Now there are signs that Dove Springs is on its way back up. Crime is down. Neighbors are getting together again. Still, Dove Springs can't quite seem to escape the problems of the past.
Do a lot of those problems still exist now?
Oh, yes. You still got a lot of those problems. The human trafficking, the drug trafficking coming out from Mexico, real big still.
Ron left APD in 2007. He went to work for the city's code compliance department. And he tried to help clean up Dove Springs. He even assigned one person full-time to the neighborhood.
40 hours a week, come into Dove Springs and help get the area cleaned up. He was bilingual. He lived here. That's what I needed out here.
But the funding for that guy, it got cut. Ron says he still has hope that things in Dove Springs will get better.
But given the fact that the problems in the neighborhood span decades, isn't it tempting to just say, you know, there's nothing we can do?
Well, you can say that. I mean, of course, it's an easy way out, but it's not going to make the area go away. People still have to live here. And most of the people that live here are good people. I mean, you have your elements of gangbangers, of your drugs, but the majority of these people are good families. If you drive around, you see the kids playing, you see the families. I wouldn't give up on them. It's got to be a sustained help, you know.
But it won't be Ron Potts bringing that help anymore. He retired a couple of months ago, and he's moving out of Austin. He says he's just ready to move on. For the past 10 months, KUT's been looking at the problems and the progress in Dove Springs. In the next half hour, we'll hear two stories of families in the neighborhood trying to make the best of their situation, and also what people here think Dove Springs needs to come back from years of neglect. This is Turning the Corner. I'm Matt Largy. Stick around. Mendez Middle School is in the heart of Dove Springs. It's the only middle school in the neighborhood, so if you grew up in the area, it's likely you've walked its halls. Students there face a lot of challenges. For one, more students at Mendez have at least one parent in jail than any other school in the district. Almost 100% of students here qualify for free or reduced lunch. Last year, a little more than half the students at Mendez passed all of their standardized tests. Students fight. Most are raised by just one of their parents. Others are undocumented, or their parents are. The principal at Mendez, Ron Gonzalez, says he just tries to get students in the door.
I have one school bus that picks up kids. The other kids are either walkers, a lot of them walk. You know, during cold, cold days, those are days where kids don't travel to school. If it's raining, we find that impacts attendance.
Attendance has been a struggle for an eighth grader here named Isai Medrano. His situation at home has caused him to miss plenty of days at Mendez. KUT's Kate McGee has his story.
Murphy's Law, anything that can go wrong will go wrong, is an understatement when it comes to Isai Medrano and his family. In the last couple years, they've dealt with a lot of stuff. Medrano's mother, Estella, got hurt in a car accident. Then she got sick with a kidney infection. She's raising three kids on her own, so Isai and his siblings had to take care of her.
We would actually go and get her medicine, and I would keep an eye on her and give her some water when she needed it. Remind her that her pills and wake her up and sort of like sometimes I'll make her something to eat.
Isai began missing a lot of school.
Last year I would actually miss a lot of school and I wouldn't really be back here. I would only come like once or twice when my sister was home, and after that I would just go home and help my sister take care of my mom.
His older brother has pancreatitis. When it flares up, Isai takes care of him too, missing even more school.
My teachers, they were really pressuring me in toward the consequences that I could be facing.
While she recuperated, Isai's mom lost her factory job. The family is undocumented, and she missed too many days, so she says they let her go. The family moved from one house to another. Money was tight. Sometimes they didn't have enough money for gas to drive to school. But it didn't mean Isai stopped practicing his main interest, the violin. His mother says hearing music helped her get through complicated times.
I try to support him 100%, the most I can. We go to the performances. After school, I take him to practice. And when he gets home, he keeps practicing 3 or 4 hours. I listen.
I just like the melody of it. The way he can get those high parts and also play the actual melody of the song.
Isai picked up the violin 3 years ago. He quickly became the best player in his orchestra class. He says the violin keeps him focused.
I'm not a bad kid. I don't do stuff that other kids do, like drug-wise. And I make great friends, and they don't do that either. And I like it.
You can always spot Isai in a group of students by his red hooded zip-up sweatshirt. He's a quiet kid for the most part. When he does speak up, it's usually to joke with his friends. He knows he's a talented violinist, but says he doesn't like the attention.
I try not to be like, you know, a big shot and stuff like that. I try not to be like that.
So you can imagine how much he liked a reporter following him around for months. Even his teacher calls him out for being talented.
Guys, this dude practices more than anyone in this room. Who thinks they practice more than him? Nope. This dude will sit there and practice for hours and hours and hours and hours a day.
That's why he's that good?
Yeah. That's how you do it.
My name is Jeffrey Hall. I'm the orchestra and guitar director here at Mendez Middle School.
Mr. Hall has conducted the orchestra for the last 4 years. He says Isai missed a lot of school last year, but this year he's more focused.
That kid is practicing hours a day. His teachers are even giving him permission, if he finishes all his work, to come over to my classroom and practice, and then he can come during lunch and practice. He just wants to be here all the time playing, and it's paying off because he sounds really good.
Isai wants to go to McCallum High School. It's an arts magnet on the opposite side of Austin. If he gets in, he worries transportation might be an issue. On top of the regular orchestra classes during the day, Mr. Hall conducts about 17 students, including Isai, in the University Scholastic League. It's a statewide competition for music, athletics, and academics. For the past 2 years, the Mendez Middle School Orchestra has won sweepstakes, which means they averaged a score of 1, the highest possible. Unlike many students in Austin and across the state, most students at Mendez can't afford private lessons or even their own instruments. They don't practice together every day like students at other schools. They practice twice a week after school. The morning of the competition, the orchestra students are nervous as they quietly warm up for their performance.
Next to perform will be Mendez Middle School, directed by Jeffrey Hall. They will be performing Apollo Suite by Isaac, El Toro by Brubaker, and Gargoyles by Spadek.
We have to play them very, very precise on stage, so that if the judges see that we're good, they will give us all ones. And then we have to go into another room where we sight read, where they just give us a music piece that we have never seen before.
Good morning, and welcome to sight reading. First of all, I'd like for you to open up your folders.
If we play it correctly and really, really like precise, we will get all ones.
Take a look up in the upper left-hand corner to make sure it's the correct.
Sight reading is a very secretive part of the contest. You aren't allowed to record it. But afterwards, the kids and Mr. Hall are not that happy.
F-sharps, those F-sharps were
The judges didn't seem to care. They gave the orchestra a nearly perfect score. One judge deducted a point. For the third year in a row, they took home a trophy. But Isai and his friend Ziasia McDonald wanted a perfect score.
I'm still kind of disappointed because we didn't get all ones.
Kind of disappointed we didn't get ones, too.
What do you think happened? Why do you think you guys didn't get
that? Well, it was Mr. Hall's fault.
We can't really blame him, but you know, the idea's out there.
Yeah.
After the competition, Isai's mom got sick again. She had gotten her job back at the factory, but lost it again when she took some days off to file immigration paperwork for her kids. Since then, she's started a new job, but she says the hours are longer and the pay is less than before.
On one hand, things have been bad, a little complicated. But on the other hand, things are good. Sometimes that happens. Not everything can be all good all the time. There has to be a little bad, too.
Isai started to miss school again, too, but not as much as last year, and he still scored well on his standardized tests, which is good because he was accepted into the arts high school, McCallum, and is planning to attend next year. Mr. Hall says it's a great opportunity.
He'll be able to take an orchestra class like we have here, but in addition to that, a violin class, and I think that's so cool.
But he says Isai's attendance problems won't fly over there.
He's going to get there, and he's going to realize that none of these habits are going to work for him there.
Isai says he's determined to go to school every day and become a great violinist. His mom, Estella, says she's proud of her son, but worries the school will change him.
He's going to be around people who are different, with more sophisticated interests. How do I explain it? Another type of environment. More refined, let's say. So I'm happy because he's becoming better, but at the same time, I'm scared. You know that the world, friendships, friends can change a person.
Isai expresses some fear about the new school, but he's more worried about being as talented as the other students.
I don't know if how they act over there. So I will have to really work as hard as I can so I can stay there with McCallum kids and keep up with them.
But keeping up with McCallum students means waking up earlier to get to school, practicing the violin more, and missing fewer classes. Students who are chronically absent have a greater chance of dropping out in high school. While Isai is smart, he still has a lot of obstacles to overcome if he's going to succeed. Getting him to school every day is the first step.
KUT's Kate McGee. There's photos of Isai and his family at our website, dubsprings.kut.org. It's impossible to talk about the future of Dove Springs without talking about one day in its recent past, Halloween 2013.
We are flooding this water all over the house.
What's your
address? We're in the street.
Let me get the fire department on the line.
Hundreds of homes were destroyed in the flood that struck that night in Onion Creek, a neighborhood within Dove Springs. Several people were killed. But for a lot of residents there, like Lupe and Lydia Huerta, the flood was just the beginning. KUT's Joy Diaz has their story.
Lupe Huerta's work schedule is always changing. He's a nurse at Breckenridge. It's hard to tell when he'll be home, but Halloween is his favorite holiday. He starts planning months ahead to play the scariest pranks on his kids. Last Halloween, however, it was not a prank when he pulled them out of bed. It was the water rushing into their house.
We all got out when it was about knee high.
It was still dark outside, not even 6 in the morning. Lupe, his wife Lydia, and their 3 children first climbed onto the car.
And then the car started being pushed off by the water. So we jumped off of the small car and got on the big truck.
But the water kept rising. Lupe looked for higher ground. The roof of the house would have to do. He helped Lydia, their teenage girls, and 5-year-old boy. But the dog, where was the dog?
I could see the dog in the window.
They couldn't let the dog drown.
And at that point, the water was already up to my chest, and I had trouble getting that door open. Lydia's screaming at me to break the window and climb out the window. And I don't know how I did it, but I got that door open with the dog on my back and just got out and got on the roof.
It was still raining. The family was soaked and shivering, their teeth chattering, but they were together. They knew rescuers would be there any minute.
I felt very confident that they would come.
The Huertas didn't live in Onion Creek when the last flood hit in 2001, but Lydia had heard from neighbors that during that flood, when the water was about 4 inches high, the fire department had been there right away. This time was different. From the roof, the family could see the water sweeping cars away down the street. They could see them crashing into homes. No rescue truck could withstand this.
And then we were up there for 5 hours and still didn't see a boat or anything.
Check, 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 check.
On the other side of town, a press conference was called that day. A helicopter hovered over the city's emergency operations center.
I've just had the opportunity in Air One.
Austin City Manager Mark Ott.
Our helicopter to tour. The areas of flooding.
Behind Ott stood Austin's mayor and the chiefs of every public safety agency in town.
This has, as I've noted, been a significant and widespread event. And though we have no confirmed fatalities, know that we still have many, many areas that need to be searched.
Days later, the search confirmed 5 people had lost their lives, among them a new mother and her 8-month-old son. The tally of damaged homes rose to more than 600. Even so, it was days before any city official came to Onion Creek. Neighbors were hurt, but not surprised. After all, this is a neglected part of town.
Buenas noches. Good evening.
A week after the flood, more than 500 people showed up at the city's first community meeting. Chaplain Rick Randall calmed the crowd by reading from the Bible.
Have mercy on me, O God, have mercy on me. For in you my soul takes refuge.
As city officials talked, no one offered their condolences for the loss the community had just suffered. No one took responsibility for having left hundreds of people like the Huertas stranded under rooftops. They talked about their equipment malfunctioning, about how they couldn't have predicted such a disaster. Then, Austin Police Chief Art Acevedo took the mic.
Had we not relied on those gauges and relied on you, we would have done better. And so for that, I apologize.
But apologies don't make recovery any easier. The Huerta family? They had insurance. Many others didn't. The family initially stayed in a hotel. By then, it was November, and Formula One was coming to town.
When we were staying in the hotel, knowing that we only had 10 days because the race was coming, and then we had nowhere to go, I was in a panic. And I've used that word before, but I've never really felt panic until I felt that.
Just before the 10 days were up, Lydia got some of her insurance money. She bought an RV online. They parked it in front of their ruined house in Onion Creek. The neighborhood survived one of the coldest winters in memory. Other communities brought aid, but the response from the city was still spotty. Some services, like trash pickup, were intermittent. Lydia Huerta says at times, the stench was unbearable. One day, she found out where the stench was coming from.
Can you see the hoof?
No. Oh, yeah.
7 horse carcasses laid along the greenbelt behind her house.
There's one.
3 months after the flood, Lydia still couldn't figure out which city department was responsible for picking up the animals.
And there's the other one.
Her calls were bounced from office to office. Then she noticed people in the community were getting sick, including her kids. They attributed their cough to the hundreds of abandoned homes that were covered in mold.
I've had to take my daughter to her asthma specialist because her asthma has been flaring up. It's not a good situation.
Dr. Prashant Reddy, a respiratory specialist, had also noticed that people were getting sick.
Number 60.
At the community health center in Dove Springs, where he works, dozens of people waited to see him.
I'll say in mid-November, the number of visits of patients with asthma that came in skyrocketed upwards. So I would say the flooding did affect our population here at William Cannon.
People were sick, tired, overwhelmed. Some showed symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. Adding to their distress, the community struggled to understand the lack of response from the city. Finally, Lydia and a group of friends created a nonprofit. They named it TARG, Travis Austin Recovery Group. They decided TARG would become their unified voice. It would help them tap into the resources other communities had set aside for flood victims.
You have to stand up for yourself. And you have to get other people to stand up for themselves. And I think part of the problem in my neighborhood, we have a lot of immigrants and they're scared. Well, you can't be scared. And I think they're starting to realize that. And they should have a voice.
More than 6 months later, Lupe, Lydia, and their kids are back in their home.
Little pieces of songs is
he takes his new guitar down from the wall, where he keeps it safe in case it floods again. While he plays, he taps his foot gently on the brand new stained concrete floor. It's his favorite feature of the house's new look. When the kids are home from school, Trey, their five-year-old, listens to electronic music over and over. It drives the girls crazy. Lupe, their dad, also drives them crazy.
You know what I found in the garage?
A scorpion?
A pile of laundry.
No, she told us that she said she was going to do it.
I did the laundry twice.
The girls talk about anything. Their school, their hair, their friends, anything but the flood. They're still scarred. But Lupa says they've also changed for the better.
I mean, they've doubled their wardrobe because they share with each other, you know? And that was not the case before the flood.
A couple of months ago, they decided it was time to get rid of the RV. But what to do with it? They bought a small piece of land and moved it there. As much as they hated living in such a small space, the trailer brought them shelter and safety, and that's something they don't want to forget.
It happened, and we're glad for it. I'd go through another flood if we're going to get closer.
I don't know about the flood.
The Huertas believe their house will be bought as part of the City of Austin's buyout program, possibly this fall. Lupa jokes it will be a nice treat after last year's trick, just in time for Halloween.
KUT's Joy Diaz. Over the past 10 months of reporting in Dove Springs, we've heard again and again how the area's problems go back decades, how again and again people, often from outside the neighborhood, come along and try to fix those problems, and how again and again those people usually fail. So we decided to ask the people who know best, the people who live and work in Dove Springs, about what the future holds and what Dove Springs needs to come back from years of neglect.
You know, dealing with the floods, I mean, that's a disaster, man. The tough part about that is, as you saw, people with very little lose a lot. You know, I think what hurt more out there was you struggled, you were able to afford purchasing your own home, and seeing it washed away.
My name is George Morales, and I've lived in Dove Springs my entire life. The best interest out there is going to be a community with a voice, because at one time we didn't have one. At one time, people made decisions for us, and seeing our community come out and make decisions for themselves is very impressive.
My name is Eliseo Ramos, and I moved into the Dove Springs area in 1980. I don't think it really is improving, and I'll tell you why. I think there's a lack of education in the young students. They don't seem to think beyond their neighborhood. They all want to be doctors and lawyers and professionals, but they don't want to work for it. I really hope that the parents understand that they have to make education priority. You know, without that, the students is going to be really struggling trying to get ahead. That doesn't mean they're not going to make it. It just means they're going to have a harder time.
Hi, my name is Benet Jacobs. I lived in Dove Springs for 3 years prior to the Halloween floods. More than anything, I would say as a young family with young kids, more community events, more activities for the children to get involved, positive programs in order to get the kids off of the streets and put them in a position that as they get older that they can give back to their community. I think a lot of times when you, quote unquote, come up in a rough neighborhood or one that has a bad reputation that Dove Springs had originally, a lot of people are so focused on just getting out. And we want to do more than get out. We want to be able to give back.
Dove Springs is only about 5 miles from the Capitol. You know, and to think, you know, and you keep going down from the Capitol down to Dove Springs, and you can see, you know, the investment that has been made down 35. You know, and to me, it's like, okay, let's step up and make some human investment here. My name is Leonor Vargas. I am the director of the Consuelo Mendez Family Resource Center. One of the most things is we did we and other residents and other leaders in the community of requesting a health clinic. That's still an ongoing issue. Health access and physical activity, you know, in our community. There's only one recreation center in the entire neighborhood, and, it's not sufficient. I know that there have been some positive things happening, but is it enough? No, it's not enough.
In our community, there's a lot of concerns, and we're meeting the majority of them, but some haven't been met. Healthcare, affordability, stuff like that has never been met. We're trying. I think in the long run, you know, we're going to still be here. The Dove Springs community is not leaving. My parents raised me there. I raised my children. My son is raising his children. You know, so there's 3 generations out there in the Dove Springs community. And it's something we hold dearly. We're a community with a lot of pride, faith, tradition, culture. The big thing we want people to understand is we are Austin too.
We worried a little when we started this series that we were the outsiders, that we were trying to solve a problem we knew nothing about, and that we, too, would ultimately fail. And I guess in a way, we did. No one's paycheck is bigger in Dove Springs because we reported on it. Teen pregnancy is still a problem. Crime is still a problem. But we hope maybe we succeeded in starting a conversation in the neighborhood and outside of it, and reminded people that despite Austin's booming growth and prosperity, Dove Springs and places like it are Austin too. Our show was produced by Joy Diaz, Kate McGee, and myself, with help from Lynn Romero. Thanks to everyone in Dove Springs who so generously gave their time and help for this project. There are some amazing photos of the folks we've heard from throughout this series at dovesprings.kut.org. I'm Matt Largie. Thanks so much for listening to Turning the Corner, Life in Austin's Dove Springs from KUT News.